accession number 30265, Reel 2.
That, you know, we really do need to capture this brigade deployment in some way. And that's, he said, maybe we should take photographs or get an artist or something. So I rang up the Corps secretary, and the Corps secretary is a small group run by a lieutenant colonel, retired lieutenant colonel, who does all sort of regimental bits for the Royal Marines. And I spoke to him, and it just so happened that the Royal Marine Museum had been looking for exactly the same sort of capturing what goes on for posterity. And an artist had gone out with 4-2 Commando on an amphibious deployment into the Mediterranean. And this was Gordon, actually. And he had actually had produced some paintings for the Corps Museum. So I thought, well, an artist is quite a good idea. And actually that started me thinking. I said, how do you remember these pretty unique deployments when you're in an organization, which, you know, in 20 years' time, 30 years' time, apart from people who read through documentation of unit diaries or whatever, how would you carry on what we had done in a regimental officer's mess or sergeant's mess? How would we represent that to the people who come on after us? So anyway, I actually then got a list of 3 or 4 potential artists, because at that stage we were then just about to go to Kosovo, and the gun regiment CO said that the gunners had an artist out, so some stuff was sent through to me. And I just made a decision to go with Gordon, because he'd already painted, you know, some stuff for the Corps Museum and been with 4-2 Commando. I hadn't really seen any of his stuff, so it was a bit of a gamble, I suppose. So I said, right, well, we'll get him out. So he came out, and that's really, I went to see the brigade commander, said, we're going to get an artist, he's going to come out. I said, that's fine. So we flew him out. At that stage, we were flying people in and out of Kosovo by, we were flying them in and out by chartered aircraft. So there was no dramas with him flying out on that. He was picked up at the airport, and he came to the headquarters in Pristina. And I met him. I'd never met him before. I'd spoken to him on the phone. That's what I was surprised. I mean, I knew what his history was. And, of course, he'd started off as essentially a painting the countryside. But he had this. I suppose it was this calling to do some military paintings. And so I met him, and he was quite self-effacing, really. But and I've learned to like him an enormous amount. Anyway, I took him into the brigade command, and he brought a portfolio. Thank God they were good, because I would have been embarrassed if they weren't. But he does some really good watercolors of not only people and where they were, the countryside, but he'd also done some very good paintings of kit, you know, ships, helicopters, and actually the kit that people carry. So I was quite enthused about this. We then had a debate with the brigade commander over what sort of painting he should do. In a brigade headquarters, when we're commanding all sorts of different organizations, running from, you know, the logistic regiment with vehicles, heavy low loaders, people, you know, making sure things get to the front line, to gun regiments, to an engineer regiment with all the kit that they have, to an armored infantry regiment, which is an army regiment, and then a commando unit in the town of Pristina itself, to our headquarters and signals parts and all the communications infrastructure. How do you represent a brigade deployment by just a painting? We actually came to the view that actually what he should probably do for the, because this painting would be done for the brigade headquarters, was actually, I think it's called a montage, where you have a number of paintings within the one big painting. In order to encapsulate and to represent the whole piece rather than just an individual painting. In hindsight, I would always go for an individual painting. But the montage had been done a couple of times in Northern Ireland as well, so people were quite used to that with previous artists. So we gave him an escort officer, and we essentially sent him out to all the units. Now, I'd also rung up all the units before to say, hey, look, we've got this artist with us. He's going to be doing a painting for the brigade headquarters. You might wish to consider if he can do any paintings for you, the units. And after the deployment, I was actually struck how few of the units had taken really up on that. And I do think you do have to have a certain feel and empathy with an artist in order, you know, to take him forward and for him to do something, because a number of the units didn't bother, really. Which was a shame, because now whether they were too busy or whether their commanding officers and second-in-commands didn't really have that empathy with what the artist was trying to do. But it was slightly disappointing. But I mean, it wasn't up to me to say, why aren't you making more use of him? Why aren't you giving him a commission? Because it was their unit. I wasn't commanding their unit. I was just trying to convince them it would be a good thing.
Did you get a reaction from people, you know, when a war artist appeared? You know, what he was doing there, and was there... You obviously empathised, but then you were sort of high up in the...
I think the it just depended who you were, but whenever Gordon went on the ground, the blokes actually, he could be quickly associate with them. They liked him. He wasn't standoffish. He wasn't very pro-military as well, of course, which helped. And he was very keen to fit in wherever he could. So, you know, he went on patrol in Pristina. He went up to the Armoured Infantry Battalion, which was the Princess of Wales Royal Regiment, who were attached to us. Went out on patrol with them, saw the kit that they had, and actually fitted in really well. But the trick was actually to make sure he was escorted everywhere by one single person. So I used one of the staff officers, one of the SO3s on my staff, to go with him everywhere, so that actually he was looked after. So if there were any niggles, any dramas, then that officer would be able to either to engage directly with the command of the unit that he was visiting, and luckily it didn't happen, also be able to come back to me and say, look, there's a bit of an issue here, we're not being allowed to do this. But that never happened, fortunately. And I didn't know how Gordon would do it. I didn't know if he set up an easel and paint or whatever it was, but actually how he did it was he would take photographs, capture images that he wanted to later transpose, I presume, onto watercolour or oil, but we decided that watercolour would probably be better. I think a better medium for us. I think, you know, I always look at some oils and think it's a bit sort of, you know, painting by numbers. That's an awful thing to say, but watercolour just seems to encapsulate more of what we were doing. So he then went away after the visit. I then went to see him after we got back. He visited us in January and we came back in March. In about April, and of course he lived quite close to me because he lived in Petersfield and I was then living in Portsmouth, so that's quite close. I then went up during leave to actually look at the sketches that he had done in order to then select the one that we wanted to do. And we went for it. There was a number of he had a number of ideas, and he had sketches of full-size paintings, and they said, well, that one could be part of the montage. So we then selected them. He then sketched out the montage, and if I remember rightly, he then brought it down to show the brigade commander. And I think that's right, although I might have got my sequencing wrong. It's not that long ago, but I'm not. Anyway, we then produced the finished article, and then it was then hung in the mess at Stonehouse. Mm-hmm. And it was then I felt that actually, if I was ever a commanding officer and on operations, I would wish to have an artist deploy and capture an image of that deployment for posterity and for infinity, because it would be in the mess forever. And people 40 years downstream would then look at that and see what it was. I think it's quite important.
You could have got a tip-top photographer with much less trouble to have done a series and, you know, got a nice picture out of it. What is the difference, do you reckon, between having an actual painting with someone on the spot sort of travelling around and looking rather than just him using his photographs? What was it to
do? That's a really good question, actually. I mean, I think... and I know that photography and photographs are is sort of the in medium at the moment, or has been. I just felt that it... You didn't get the depth of feeling. And actually, sometimes, many times, photographs can look a bit out of place hanging on a wall of sort of a traditional type mess, and it's more attuned to paintings. That would be my view, and that's why we didn't go for photographs.
And looking at this montage, you know, and you've explained so well all the different tasks, you know, the Royal Marines were doing. Did you think he got this sort of reality of the deployment? Was that achieved?
I think he did. I also think that he, you know, he went down into massive detail on the personal equipment that people were carrying. And, you know, the guys would lay it out and then he'd sketch it, or he'd take photographs and then sketch it. Because he wanted to get the details right. And the details are actually stand out in his paintings. So that was very good.
And I suppose the same goes for weapons and vehicles. Is that?
Yeah,
this must have been quite. You know, he's a landscape painter, isn't he?
Yeah, he is a landscape painter, yes. But he just captures the detail almost exactly right, which is fascinating to see actually, and would painstakingly take a lot of time over it. Of course, what I hadn't realised, at the same time that he was doing this, he was also doing a lot of paintings for the Royal Netherlands Marine Corps. And they were using him as their official war artist. And he deployed... And actually, he'd done some paintings for them in Bosnia before we'd even considered him to come to the Royal Marines. So he had done a lot for them and has still done a lot for them and has deployed to Western Sahara and Iraq as well, actually, with the Dutch Marines. Which I think is good news. So I should go back. The other issue with paintings is that in a regiment, of course, it's not done for free, because you know you do have to pay him because you're commissioning him to paint. And they're not cheap. So what we did for the brigade headquarters was we wrote to the corps secretary and we managed to get money out of core funds to fund 50% of the painting. And then we, the officers, then chipped in the rest to fund the remaining part. And, of course, that's the issue in regimental messes, is that unless you get funding to cover some of it, it's going to be quite expensive, perhaps prohibitively expensive, dependent on how well known the artist is. So maybe that's why some regiments, core units, didn't want to do it. So it'd be rather nice. I think they didn't want to do it because actually the people at the top felt that it wasn't that important. So that's why. So that's the Kosovo piece. And then...
Yes, before... you're going on to Afghanistan next. Yes, a few more questions about Kosovo and your experience, because after all, you were his main minder, weren't you? He looked to you always, I believe.
Well, yes.
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 What were the sort of... Did you have any worries so far as he was concerned? I mean, a civilian. What was the situation in Kosovo when Gordon went there regarding the KLA and the Serbs?
Compared to what's going on now in Iraq and Afghanistan, it was pretty benign, frankly. Although, without the benefit of hindsight, I mean, it was an operational deployment, and there were insurgents, and there was the occasional shootings in Pristina. So, you know, it wasn't a peacekeeping operation by any means. And, of course, at the beginning of our tour, we were still planning on the Serbs potentially coming back across the boundary, not a border, the boundary. But actually, as our 6 months went on, the chances of that receded. So, in many ways, relatively benign. Although, again, and certainly people now would laugh at what went on, but actually it was still very real, and there was still the chance that you know, something could happen. But Gordon had all the kit. You know, his own personal kit.
Yes. Did you provide that?
He brought his own, his boots and his, you know, his working clothes. He didn't want to be, and I didn't want him to be clothed as a Marine. We wanted him to be separate. But we did provide combat body armour, so, you know, because to put that on, etc. But Gordon knew what he was doing, and he was going into a war environment or conflict, but didn't seem to faze him at all, to be honest.
Mm. Is when he went about, you know, on patrols, and you see pictures of how much the, you know, the troops have to carry, was he fairly likely? You know, you had, earlier on, you had this image of him with an easel. I imagine that would never have been possible.
No.
Am I right in thinking
No,
that?
Things would have moved on too quickly.
Yeah, did you have to keep him going? You know, I can imagine with an artist, he might have wanted to sort of stay in a particular place.
Well, in Kosovo, I didn't go out with him, because one of the lieutenants went out with him. But in Pristina, I know that when he was doing the patrols in Pristina, of course the patrols wouldn't move very fast because they'd be stopping, talking to people with their interpreters. So when that would happen, or they'd be running vehicle checkpoints. So when that was happening, he'd be taking photographs because, of course, people weren't moving around, and then they'd move off to the next task. And when he saw something, you know, he could ask the multiple commander, can we just stop here for a bit? I'd like just to capture the light or whatever it was against this church or whatever. So that's what would happen. And the same happened in Afghanistan, actually.
And I suppose it was a question also of you having to, you know, bearing in mind security, even though you've explained, you know, the benign nature of this, or relatively benign, because I think it was a bit... ups, you know, it was in flux at the time.
Yes, it definitely was, and actually just after he left, you know, a bus was bombed and 11 Serbs were killed. I think it was 11 coming across the border through insurgency. So, you know, it was definitely not hugely benign.
I knew, you know, having heard him speak about this, that he was quite appalled at a lot of the behaviour that went on, you know, how people had been treated. And I suppose this would have been very different from an army perspective of conflict. Was that ever a problem, you know?
Or he's talking about the indigenous population.
Yes, you know, and was it interesting? Perhaps it's not the right question to ask you, as you weren't out with him so much, more so in Afghanistan, how he would have reacted to sort of these signs of suffering of the population.
Certainly, I mean, I know that Gordon, because of course there had been ethnic cleansing, and certainly he'd been seen it in Bosnia, where there's probably much more, where, you know, populations which had got on for years had suddenly split, and there was a schism between, certainly in Bosnia, you know, between Muslim and Serb or Croatian Orthodox, and how that schism had happened so quickly. and ethnic cleansing had been carried out. In Kosovo, there was, to an extent, that, but it was more hidden, because Kosovo, of course, it was the centre of Serbian nationalism, because that's where, you know, the Serbian nationalism had come from, the number of battles which had gone on, was 90% Kosovo Albanian, 10%, and I may have got those percentages wrong, 10% mm-hmm. Serb. And there had been ethnic cleansing carried out, and the Serbs were in enclaves. But he would have seen burnt out buildings, the division of how the Serbs lived, how the Kosovo Albanians lived, etc. And if you hadn't seen that before or been trained in your pre-deployment training, it would be considered to be maybe not horrifying, but strange, bearing in mind that, you know, one day he'd been in the UK and then the next day he was just thrown into maybe not the maelstrom of Kosovo life, but, you know, the hurly-burly of Kosovo life as far as the military were concerned. And, of course, we were completely segregated because we were in camps, you know. Although in Pristina itself, you know, we had companies living in the police stations to have that military police link. Even then, in quite austere conditions, the companies were living, which he would have captured.
Yeah, and he stood up to that well, did
yeah,
he?
Yeah, I mean, he's quite robust, to be honest.
Yeah. Yes. I was wondering also about the sort of interaction with your men. Did he have to get used to army language? And, you know, was this easy enough to adapt for him?
Yeah, I think everybody has to get used to military language, really. Not only the profanities, but also the TLAs, the three-letter abbreviations, and the words which have come out through generations of us using them, which to an outsider is completely impenetrable. Until you've been with them for a bit. A very good example of that was the media correspondent who was embedded with me during the invasion of Iraq, who, after 6 to 8 weeks, could speak the same lingo. He just picked it up like that very quickly, and even wrote some of it in his articles back to the Times and during the conflict.
Do you remember his name? Has it come back to you?
I'm going to have to think about that.
So the Times, John Lloyd?
No. He's now the correspondent in Spain.
Not a worry. No, that can easily be, you know, when we talk about that later, you might or I might think of something.
Sure.
Looking after Gordon as a war artist, this was obviously a novel experience for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, but it was just another experience. It was just another thing to be done.
Yeah. You know. Was this very different from having journalists and dealing with the media?
Massively. Massively. The biggest difference is that the media could write something and it would be in the papers the next day, whereas with Gordon, he was doing a painting, you know, and whilst the painting could express a significant amount of what was going on, to some people, only some people would ever see it. With the media, millions of people would see it.
So, and perhaps dealing with journalists, we might talk about this later on, all through your career, because I dare say there are changes.
Complete changes, yeah.
And also do you find in the Marines that... the Marines now have your own media people more so than when you joined?
Yes, and I think we hopefully understand the media more than we did 30 years ago. Although we did have experience with the media in Northern Ireland. And I would hope that maybe the media understand us rather better, because we come from two completely different lifestyles.
So this is the end of Reel 2, Brigadier Geoffrey Mason.